Well, hey there, and welcome to episode number 9 of Groove, the No Treble podcast, which you can always find at notreble.com. My name is Mitch Joel, and let's get on with the show. Who are you and what do you do?
My name is John Campbell and I play bass in Lamb of God.
You play a heavy bass?
Yeah, sure.
So talk a little about, not necessarily your roots, but where in you were like, heavy. Like, at what point were you like, okay, there's something that's snapping in my brain and I'm going into this place?
Huh. I don't know if there was a specific moment. I remember, like, just getting into, like we were speaking earlier, into DC hardcore and punk rock when I was in high school and junior high. And then came to Richmond, Virginia, and found out about bands like Metallica from Chris Adler, and then bands like Gwar from just being there, and the various punk rock and other types of bands that ended up coming out of Richmond. But as far as super dupes, like incredibly heavy, I remember a band called Codeine.
Oh, no, totally, yeah, and, for sure.
That song, Cave In.
Yeah. Oh, that's a random band.
Well, some good friends of mine covered that in their band years and years and years ago in Richmond. But that's a great record, the whole Codeine record. But that's probably some of the heaviest stuff I've ever heard.
But do you get into heavy music first, or are you playing music before you're into that genre?
I guess I came into it from an aggressive,
okay,
but maybe not aggressive like we were talking. There's a difference. Like DC hardcore had kind of a thing. Like emo came from there, although it became something completely different. But it just came from I guess the aggression of punk rock kind of developed into a heaviness of, you know, like the Melvins,
right.
Another heavy band.
So. I'm always fascinated with this idea because there's people who love music. I love music. And then I started playing music. And you try. And you practice and you try. And I think it takes a certain maturity or maybe immaturity to realize. Like I tell other bass players that I'm not a bass player. I know how to play bass. Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself a bass player. So what's that moment for you when you go from loving music to like I have a creative force inside me. I want to make music.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, again, has been something that's always just kind of been there and slowly developed into what it is in me personally. I could probably psychoanalyze myself.
That's what we're here to do. Here to do it. We're doing this. We're cracking the nut open today.
You know, I just... who doesn't like a little attention?
Is that it, yeah?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, when I got into, like... actually performing music was moving to Richmond, Virginia, which had this insane music scene, at least from what I knew, coming from the suburbs in Northern Virginia, where within a month of living in Richmond, two blocks down from the dorms I was living in, Gwar's practice space was there, and then there was the bedroom right across the street, and they had a show, so they would get suited up in their thing and then just walk across the street and go upstairs and play a show. That had a huge impact on me. And then I would be at a house party, you know, 2 weeks later, and dudes from Gwar hanging out, like, as...
human beings.
Yeah. As human beings. Not only human beings, but dudes that were relatable.
But they...
Although they were a little bit older in the scene. They were the scenesters. I was kind of the younger kid. And there's a whole group of scenesters from Richmond that had an insanely great scene going on. Bands like the Alternatives...
But those bands, like especially Gwar, which I you know, metal is one of those things where I'm so into the genre where from the outside it can look sort of silly, it can look strange, but there were like a lot of the bands you're mentioning, there is a heavy performance aspect to the music, and there's an intensity to it. Like Gwar was their art, like they were.
Sure.
It wasn't just dick jokes, like they really wasn't. They were trying to do this crazy show.
Sure, but they're themed with dick jokes. A band that I should mention, coming from that was very influential, was this band Breadwinner, which the three-piece instrumental band that's incredibly mathy and incredibly heavy, and I guess hard to understand at first, but it's that band. I don't know. The band Slang Louse. I don't know.
Oh, I never heard of them. No.
These are all amazing bands from Richmond that never got out of Richmond, but weren't ever really concerned with that. Right. There was just this little insular scene of amazing bands that, like, they would play a house party, and then, like, if you wanted to be in a band, that was kind of, the bar was set really fucking high.
You and I were just talking about the fact that we're really similar in age, and I'm proud that I'm at the age where mathy is a great way to describe music. Because I don't think, like, when we were growing up in the, we'll call it late 70s and early 80s, probably when we hit our most influential moments of what stuck with us, I don't think mathy was a way we could ever describe music, but it's become something.
Yeah, sure.
That's pretty good.
Are you familiar with Breadwinner?
I'm not.
Oh, man. They have a record called The Burner, which I suggest anyone listening to this, and you as a fan of music, listen to. Some amazing musicians from back in the early 90s in Richmond.
So you're in this thing, you're in this world, you're being influenced. At one point, you tap into the bass, because we have options. Well, unless you can sing.
In the shower.
Exactly.
I was trying to play drums. My friend had a drum set. He had a roommate who played bass, and had a bass amp, and another roommate played guitar, and he had a guitar amp, and it was all in his room. And I was like, dude, let me play your drums, because, like, your roommates are terrible. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, let me learn how to play drums on your kids. Like, yeah, okay. But then the bass player left for the summer, and my friend was, like, hanging out, listening to all the bullshit noise anyway. I was like, dude, just play bass. I'll play drums.
Wow. And so tell me a bit about what that initial thing was like. Was it you just saying, well, there's drums, there's bass? Was it when you played the instrument, you were like, okay, I'm connected to it? And the reason I asked this is because, again, I was saying how I traipsed out of bass a little bit, and then I started, you know, pick up an acoustic guitar. I'm like, I need to stay in music. But then when I picked up the bass again, there was a real familiarity to it. Like, it felt
sure.
I had a connection.
Right. Well, actually, the first instrument I ever had to, like, it stays in my room in its case, and I can have access to it whenever, it was a baritone ukulele that my dad gave me.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then, I don't know if I felt connected to the struggle of learning how to play whatever instrument I was going to learn how to play. But recently I just picked up a baritone bass, and I've been getting back on that, and that shit is amazing.
It feels natural to you, right? Or
yeah, well, it feels familiar, sure.
Okay, the familiarity. And so you've got, now you're in this world where you've got bass, you've got some friends, you're forming a band that isn't Lamb of God, it's called something else. Mm. We'll get to that, I guess.
I was asked actually earlier in the last interview I did. They oh, was that you just asked me?
No.
No, okay.
No, I don't
think
so.
Ask me.
So, at what point are you like, okay, there's something here. Like, I want to record. I want to make this more than just we're jamming, we're fooling around. Like, at what point does that?
That's always, I don't know. It's just kind of always kind of band mentality. You got to write songs, write a set, record to, I guess, to eventually be able to go on tour so you can get in a van and go off on this great adventure.
But is it something where you're like, I'm a bassist, or are you like, I'm in the band, I happen to play bass? Like, how do you see yourself as the musician bass guy? Or do you not? You just see as, I'm in the band, I play bass.
Yeah, I guess I never, I'm maybe not self-reflective. yeah, I don't know. I play bass in the band. It's a band that I've put over half of my life into, but in the early, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I stopped to think about it so much. Like, I mean, we also, everyone does a little bit of everything.
That's right.
Especially, you know, when it comes to loving the van, taking care of the van, calling this up to
So there's this something happens in terms of your recording, and you're moving into this new world of people coming to know you. As a guy who, I can be self-reflective of what's happened to you, because I'm looking from the outside, and it's you know, it's what you do as a music nerd. And they call this the new wave of American heavy metal. And I,
oh well, you're jumping quite a bit.
I know we are. Yeah, I know
we
are. But we're gonna bounce. And so when you hear that as a metal fan, you sort of, you somewhat cringe, because all I can align it to is the new wave of British heavy metal, which was
right.
Almost the foundation of what it was. I think now in 2015, though, I can look back and go,
sure.
It totally was the new wave of American heavy metal. I guess all of us didn't think that metal was going to have another moment like that. And what's crazy to me about it is the bands, it wasn't like Seattle or LA. It was just this thing of bands from all over the place, whether it was Slipknot or you guys. It really sure. came from all over.
Yeah, I think it was. Slipknot kind of slipped into the new metal thing.
That's
and
true.
They kind of broke heavy music on the radio, I feel like.
Yeah, that's true.
But the new wave of American heavy metal thing was just a label that was getting put on us at the time. And it was the bands that we had been playing like metal fests and basements with just as this, for whatever reason, underground scene kind of built up. I can't tell you why there were people outside of where we were to connect with so that we could go play. But
it's strange, right?
Do you remember Maximum Rock and Roll?
Totally.
They put out the yeah. Book Your Own Fucking Life every year.
Yeah.
That was how we booked our tours in the beginning.
Unbelievable.
So yeah, it is strange that there are people who are like, yeah, sure, come to my house, stay in my basement, eat spaghetti, and play a show.
And it wasn't, when I say decentralized, I mean like, it was really decentralized. These bands were coming, I mean, in your brain, if someone would have told me there's going to be this massive band called Lamb of God from Richmond, I would have been like, what? Like, what? How? It's not going to happen.
Well, I think it kind of came, at least from our end, from the DIY kind of thing, although we never stopped to put that label on it. It was, just that, oh fuck, this would be great.
But was there something like if you could, you have to be able to self-reflect where you're like, was there something happened politically? Was there something happening in the States where if you look back and go, there was this moment where people wanted this thing again now?
Because I don't know if I saw that big of a picture then. I do remember when we were called Burn the Priest. This is kind of unfortunate to throw into a history, I guess. But occasionally people, and I don't know if they were kidding or not. And Burn the Priest, this was, I mean, a very small amount of people saw us. People would come up and tell us that they had been touched by priests,
right.
And that like that was a title they could relate to, a proper noun they could relate to.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know.
I want to talk a bit about the style of bass that you play in terms of when you're thinking about what you need to do as a bass player in the band. What is it? Is it terror? Is it making sure that the drums are connecting to the guitar? Is it making a voice from the bottom?
Yeah, probably. Generally, what I do when I'm playing bass, I've said in the past that I play guitar on a bass.
Yeah, I've read that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of bass players go, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear you say that.
but
it's authenticity,
I mean,
and it's good.
I am what I am.
Yeah.
I think on this latest record, I've tried to treat the instrument more as it was designed, but if it makes him feel better when I play my baritone youth, I don't really have the proper technique in my strumming.
Right.
So.
But I wanted to ask you about that because I actually felt that in the playing, and I don't know if you've vocalized that in other publications. What's happening with you and your playing? Is it that you're getting older? Is it that you're finding more comfort in how the song, the bass can be phrased in the music? Because that's what I
mean.
Felt.
Really, it's just because it's generally speaking, what I'll do is learn the guitar riff and then just throw it down in the lower registers or try and
double it up.
But interestingly, sometimes like if I'm rolling up and if they do something that crosses the octave, I'll drop it back down so it does some odd things sometimes. Some sound weird to play, but really makes sense if you just think that it's just dropping at one point, playing the same thing. But, you know, I think we've developed as a band, if you listen to the Burn the Priest stuff, that's all just riff, riff,
right.
Riff, 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 riff. Yeah, and I think we're just developing as a band where it makes more sense to do that, where, I mean, maybe it is where we're getting older and more comfortable and not as angry.
But isn't part of it just, it's like the natural evolution, and the reason I'm asking or sort of going down that direction is because some bands, they don't become parodies of themselves, but they believe, well, that's not Lamb of God, that's not Van Halen, and it stifles what they want to do creatively, but they feel like, well, that's not what... But I feel like you guys are willing to push and risk, or am I wrong?
No, you're totally right. That would be boring, I think, to put out every record the same.
No, but some bands would be like, but it is who we are, and this is what we do,
no,
and our fans...
I don't want to be terribly judgmental, but I know maybe they look at it as a brand that they are building, defining, and making, whereas we really just started as like, hey, let's play some heavy music and have fun with it.
Do you?
And we're lucky enough to have some success.
Do do you feel that you, as a musician, are you fully satisfied in what happens in Lamb of God, or are you one of those people where it's like, I got this other stuff, I got to do this, especially when it comes to the instrument or what you think you and the bass could do?
Well, I've wanted a drum set for years and years and years, and picked one up right before we started this tour.
Electric or real?
A real thing.
Okay,
but like nothing fancy at all. It's a piece that somebody I knew had, and I gave him a couple $100 for a drum set.
So you want to play drums? That's the next. That's
I've
the next frontier.
Since I started,
I think
this,
every musician wants to play drums.
And
so hit things.
Yeah, well, rhythmically, just want to make some noise, man.
Yeah. So, you've had a crazy couple of years, and it's now fully documented. It's been all over, even like the mass media took it in.
Yep.
Where are you guys at as a unit, and where are you at musically? Obviously, the new album 7 just came out, so it's fresh, and I guess that hurdle's been jumped over. But that sort of stuff stays with you, I guess. You don't just you don't just write a book and feel released.
Yeah, but that's, you know, not to say that things that happened in the past and shaped you aren't important, but you know, we're. The past is there, and we're here in this moment. So.
But there's a band of brothers that I found really interesting. Like, you know, look, the media's going to hide things. The band might try and cover things up. It really felt like the conversation was like the situation with Randy caused a financial issue to the band, and it wasn't like there was this knives-in attitude. Like, you guys really sort of said, we have to now work through that issue, as if it was like, you know, medical insurance, and like you had to pay off a surgery. No, but I'm being like really pragmatic about it. Like, you guys really stuck together in a very unique way to rebuild what had to have been. It's tough. I mean, you're full-time musicians.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a pretty intense psychological shock going on my end, thinking that this thing that we'd spent over half our lives, basically dedicating everything to, was going to be gone. But there are. There are plenty of other ways that you can lead yourself to financial ruin.
Exactly.
This is just, I guess, a unique one. And I'm over doing it to call it financial ruin. But,
no.
It's,
but
I mean, it's...
It's a strange it's, thing.
It is,
it's
but
a strange
it,
thing.
The way I process it is that that the greater loss is the loss of a life of a family member of the family in Prague. So, you know... I'm still here.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that you read and you don't know how to digest it.
Yeah, try living through
no,
it.
No, that's
and
what I'm saying.
The uncertainty
like
of how that went on was such an intensely unsettling time in my life.
Yeah, no, I can't even begin to imagine. I want to switch back to the bass, because one of the things it's funny and silly. It's like, so you became known as this guy who's playing three strings, and when people ask me about it, I always say that I think necessity is the mother of invention, and that's the story, right? It's like,
yeah, that's
you just couldn't afford to.
Well, that's the answer that I've given in an interview when I was shocked that somebody it's great. I think they write about it because that's just something to write about.
Right.
It was really not that big of a deal. I just, I don't use that string anymore.
Do you not really still?
There is one song that in which I use that, but we don't have it in the set.
I'm trying to remember. Wasn't there a metal band that the guy always played two strings? Was it Disneyland?
Did I play one string?
Oh, that might have been right.
Yeah.
It's like an Ebo.
About the same time, there was another. I remember there was another band that played it too. And there's always Girls Against Boys. They had the two bass players.
Right, that's true too, for sure.
Great band.
Great band.
And they came from a band called Soulside from the DC hardcore scene.
I didn't realize they were
playing. It was a band called Soulside. Basically, a different singer became Girls Against Boys.
Okay, that's pretty wild.
That's great.
So, right now, with the new album out, are you in the phase where it's tour album, or creatively, where do you go as a musician? What's your cycle like for?
Mentally, as a musician, right now, I'm just trying to have the perfect show and chasing that buzz of the perfect show.
Does that happen? What's that?
Yeah.
Does it happen?
Yeah. I mean, well, you have a couple stinkers, but yeah, when you're just nailing stuff and everything sounds right and everything connects, it's like you're floating above the stage.
Yeah. So tell me about live and playing. Not the difference between that and studio. I think that's sort of like a boring question, but like you said, there's an adrenaline to play this music that you can't. You're going to do once. You're not going to replicate after. It's good. How do you keep that momentum going? It's heavy music, so it's not like you can't phone it in,
Right.
This music can't be fun, especially I think where you guys are at in terms of your career and your success. You can't afford to do it.
Being an overgrown bar band that's rapidly aging, you have to consider the performance of the music as well as the crafting of the music. I don't know how. It's still there when we get on stage. That's what I'm sitting around waiting to do all day.
When we talk about kids, you're like, okay, well, what percentage is nature versus nurture? When you're playing, what percentage is mental versus really physical? Because the physical part is, I know you guys, it's crazy.
I mean, that's, I guess, a combination of having the right finger bone lengths with the muscles in the right spot and being lucky enough to spend enough time being paid to do this, that have had enough practice doing this that I've managed to develop that skill.
But is it a blue collar approach? Is it like I wake up, I write, I play music, it's what I do. It's sort of like I don't just lounge all day and then we, or is it this the lifestyle of lounging?
Because it can be the lifestyle of lounging when you have the time, but I don't at home have a bass on the wall and then spend hours playing it when I'm at home. But I also, like I said, I have two children, so while I'm away, this is my lounging right now relative to the rest of my life. But I've got the baritone uke that I play at least daily, sometimes multiple times a day.
How much effort do you put into the physical bass playing then? What's your...
As we have a tour coming up, I'll pick up the bass at home and just run through stuff and just make sure I remember stuff.
So it's not an everyday, there's this thing here and I don't feel it's expressed everything I needed to...
To disappoint everyone?
No, it's not disappointment. Yeah. I think everyone brings their own style to it, which is what makes art amazing. So no, not at all. So... Who are there bass players that you look to and you're like, see, that's something right there?
Oh, I remember this guy Mike Bishop, who played in Gwar and then the Keypone, and now he's back in Gwar.
Okay.
Watching that guy play was like, holy shit! Like he's got insane finger technique, and then he starts singing.
Understood bass players who could sing. I find that, I mean, I think it's probably one of the reasons I might have like said I can't be a bass player.
Have you ever had the chance to speak to Mike Bishop?
No, but I, you know, even when I think about Geddy Lee I could go through the
bass singing and playing.
And foot pedal. It's not enough. You got to play piano with your feet too. Yeah, exactly. So easy. So natural.
There are some people that are uniquely talented like that.
And tell me a little bit about inspiration. So, I mean, you are very, I think you're very much an artist. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Where does inspiration outside of music, reading, movies, film, books, where do you?
I watch a ton of documentaries.
I'm a documentary guy too.
I read occasionally. Are you, not to blow up any websites or anything, but /r documentaries? Are you familiar with that? I left out the first half of the website.
Though. Okay, you'll tell us me later.
Reddit.com.
Okay.
Documentaries at subreddit.
No, so they're posting movies in there.
It's just links to on YouTube where there's
all the good stuff.
Movies.
Right, so good. Okay, I'm going. I'm there. Netflix, I'm exhausted. I think I finished Netflix on the documentary section, so I gotta.
If you understand how Reddit works, it's
totally
updated constantly.
Yeah. So, life on the road. Playing wise, so we're sitting here, it's heavy Montreal, you are playing much later in the day. Is it one of those things where it's a sort of slow flash life where like the days are really sort of like you're just working towards the night? What's the lifestyle like as a working bass guy?
Well, at this point it's a fairly easy schedule, to be honest. But we've had some in stores where we'd have to go about lunchtime to an in-store.
Don't make it sound too easy because people want to do it. Arduous work, you know.
This is my schedule. Other people have different schedules in the band. Willie wakes up like 8 in the morning, sometimes 6 in the morning. It's just his style, which actually would drive me crazy on the tour bus. I like my style of submarining and sleeping until it stops and you got what you need. You go to an in-store, you come back, at the merch booth, had signed drum heads and signed CDs, so there'll be a stack of things to run through and sign. And then we do a meet and greet. And then I've got got about an hour or two to kill trying to catch up with my family back home.
Right. Two young kids. How old are you?
4 and 7.
So similar world. That's not an easy lifestyle then. So this is getting more, is this getting more and more complex as you get older then?
I mean, doesn't it always?
Yeah.
Regardless of whether
right.
you're
it's true, fair enough.
A dude lucky enough to play bass or a dude who's pushing right. boxes or whatever.
So I want to sort of bring it together by asking you about where the band is at, because I still feel as popular as it is, there's a lot more levels for this band to achieve, and it feels to me like the past being the past, the new album being what it is, and the sort of trajectory as someone who's been in this industry and seen it, that there's, I feel something happening, I feel it for you, I guess what I'm saying. You have to put the pedal a bit further down now to make that happen in this day and age, right?
Yeah, I think so, sure. I mean, we put out a record that playing live some of these tracks that might attract a bigger audience, then maybe it won't develop in that way.
But is this a band that wants to Metallica, Slayer-ish, like top four type of thing? Because that's the age part, right? Because as it goes on,
yeah, I mean, honestly, we just sort of put out a record that we're really into making, and it's just we don't do it thinking like. I mean, although when I heard Overlord for the first time, I started joking about this as our More Than Words.
Right.
If you remember.
Extreme.
Extreme, right. Yeah. Right. I even was thinking about trolling people when the single got released. I put up a link to go to More Than Words,
right.
But I thought better of it. But yeah, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't think we have plans to necessarily. We'll see where this takes us. You know, who comes out of the woodwork to invite us to their play a show somewhere.
The other part of the band that I find really interesting is we do live in a day and age where people talk about how much harder it is to be a band, how much harder it is to sell music, digital, web, all that stuff. You feel to me to be transcending that. Like the fans are the fans and they are buying this stuff. They are sticking by it. Am I misguided?
No, I think for the most part that's true. I mean, when we changed the name from Burn the Priest to Lamb of God, we were a little bit bummed thinking, dude, what about the...
That was what? That was 90...
It was 2000. Okay. When we signed Prosthetic. But we were like, dude, we sold like 1,500 records as Burn the Priest. Like, what about those dudes? They're like, how are they going to know who the fuck Lamb of God is?
Right.
And I think the first pressing of our shit, Prosthetic put a sticker on there formerly known as Burn the Priest just to appease us.
But now in the digital age, is it affecting you negatively or positively? And I've interviewed artists that have done extremely well with it. Like, they just know how to use social media. They know to market. They're actually using it to leverage versus it being this, oh, it's so hard to sell albums, it's so hard to get music out there.
We have people. There are people.
Very important, yes.
There are people that take care of the social media stuff that is not the bass player in the Lamb of God. Although
is it not your thing?
Not particularly. I have a Facebook account where I'm in touch with my friends and family. I make friends as we travel around. I've tweeted a couple times.
I've noticed.
I've got an Instagram account, but it's like 30 followers, and that's just my friends.
We're going to work it. We're going to work it.
No, I don't want 100.
Yeah, okay, we'll keep it quiet.
Yeah.
And state of metal in general, state of that, how do you see it? I mean, we're here at a three-day festival where there's a lot of stuff going on, but the butt is it's a challenge. I think it's a challenge genre. I don't think it's the same as it was when we had moments when we were growing up, 80s, 90s, that were...
I'd like to think that it is changing, as all things do, as is the nature of things. And I am thankful that I'm still able to do what I do. Having what we went through happen, life has got curveballs ready for you. There's another Kurt Cobain around the corner who's going to come out and expose the ridiculousness of metal,
right,
with just a couple songs.
But metal, metal's a cockroach. You know what I mean?
it really is.
It's a cockroach. Rock is dead and Gene Simmons.
Well, I don't know.
Metal's a cockroach.
I think it's the, like, punk rock and metal kind of fused its soul together,
right,
back in the in our formative years. And there's an energy for sure that is pervasive.
Do you think the the bass as an instrument still has a very interesting trajectory. And the reason I'm asking you this is because you're a musician and you know it's the bass is still a new instrument. Like the electric bass,
sure,
is, you know.
I mean, I think I still find it incredibly interesting, and I have ridiculous amounts to learn on it. Obviously, I don't feel it's going anywhere.
And from a tech point too, I find that you are trying other things, not just with how you play, but with the sound of what's happening too. That seems to be something that's my. You're nodding or not?
I'm trying
or
to think.
Or is it more production versus you?
I have a solid sound that I like to stick with, and I'm not a big fan of pedals and effects. Those are things that can break and go wrong, and I guess when I learned how to play bass, it costs money.
Hence the three strings.
Three strings.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.